Welcome into 11 Personnel, brought to you by our friends at Monticello Bank, the best
Welcome
bank
into 11
in the history of banks.
Brought to you by our friends at Monticello Bank.
Should you do it again?
Bank. No, that wasn't me this time. That was on old Stephen Peek. But 128 years of service, Monticello Bank. They go wherever the Wildcats go with the GoNBC mobile app. So whether you're going to the NFL draft like we are next week, or whether you're sitting at your own home and don't want to make it out to one of their 21 branches in 14 different markets, the people matter. Your banking matters. Bank conveniently wherever you are with our friends at Monticello Bank. Download the GoNBC app. Find them on the web at nbcbank.com. Monticello Bank, where people matter. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Big shout out to our friends at Monticello Bank, and a big shout out to all of you, all of our friends who are watching, following along, who submitted questions for this mailbag episode. Like it, a lot of people do the mailbags, but we typically, that's just kind of, you know, we answer questions all the time on the YouTube chat. That's kind of how we roll. Right. But this week, we're in between spring ball, we're in between the NFL draft, we're opening it all up. So ask us whatever, whenever. Either in the chat, we've got super chats. We've also got some questions from KS Board. But I did want to start with some recruiting scuttlebutt, which I believe, you know, we did actually get one of those questions formally submitted from Dave Nine on the board. So what are our chances with Cortland Ford? Does he have a timetable for his decision? And I actually got tipped off recently, like at that South Carolina. They're trying to mess around. Freaking
the other USC.
Freaking Beamer, man. He's just the worst. But this isn't just a – I've heard it from multiple people from various angles that they're still confident Kentucky is going to be the ultimate destination for Cortland Ford. He's beginning his official visit tomorrow. We'll be here for the weekend. And lucky we could have ourselves a commitment before the weekend's over with. So,
yeah.
I think we can do RPM picks now for portal players. I'm going to have to go do me one of them RPMs for once we get off the air here.
Yeah, USC, University of South Carolina, they also have some big offensive line questions this year. That's probably one of the weaker points of their team, so that's not a huge surprise. They're going to have a Yale transfer starting at center, I believe. So that's not a surprise that they're trying to throw their hat in the ring here. And, I mean, it's been a pretty quiet recruitment, which happens a lot here with some portal guys. And so I think Ford's supposed to get there to Kentucky tomorrow or today, later today.
Correct. Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow. And so we'll see. They should be able to hopefully wrap this up pretty fast. The thing is with this window, since it's so small, they kind of have to make decisions fast. So if he's going to go on another visit, it's going to have to happen pretty soon whenever he returns home from Kentucky. So we should know one way or the other, I think, pretty fast with Cortland Ford.
The other thing, too, you mentioned it being quiet. If you're, generally speaking, in the transfer portal, the quieter recruitments are the ones that end up working out better for your team. Like Jarrente Davis, the Jackson State kid, he's been a little bit of everywhere, been talking a lot. Those are the ones where you're just a little like, I don't know how that's going to go. But the quieter ones that happen relatively quickly, we saw on the first go around with the cornerbacks in Jansen Dunn and JQ Hardaway. We kind of found out the day they were on campus, and then it was signed, sealed, delivered within 48 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on one more question before we get to our listeners' questions? What are your thoughts on Kentucky offering the cornerback from Rhode Island? Is it Antonio Carter? Is that his name?
The second, yes.
Because they offer – there's also Kid Ovian, who I think he has a similar name. He's like Antonio something the third. Maybe Antonio Davis the third. So, I'm getting my wires crossed with recruits. But wouldn't expect them, when we talked about portal needs a week ago, didn't expect cornerback to show up. So what do you think about them offering this kid?
I thought it was definitely interesting. You look at the cornerback position and like they have a lot of bodies, a lot of numbers spent there, but they don't have really anything proven outside of Andrew Phillips. So it's a wide open position battle. It seemed like Maxwell Hairston's probably the favorite to be the starter there. I'm still pretty big on J.Q. Hardaway, but it was definitely wasn't settled going into. So I wasn't necessarily super surprised that they threw their hat in the ring, especially when you turn on the tape. This guy is a boundary cornerback. Like, he's got good instincts. He can tackle. He can cover well enough. Proven production. But you dig into him a little bit. He does have, like, a safety background. So maybe it could be kind of a guy where they just get in and they can just plug him in somewhere. I think he's got two. He'll be a redshirt senior, so he's got 2 years of eligibility left. You look at that safety room. You only got six scholarship safeties: Jalen Geiger, redshirt senior; Zion Childress, true senior. So you could lose some guys there pretty quick. So he kind of almost might be a tweener there. So I definitely did think it was interesting. But you look at that second cornerback position. I think it's just, they have guys they just don't know who's gonna start there. I think Harrison's probably the favorite right now. Him and Hardaway, probably co-favorites. But then you also got Jordan Robinson, who's worked in the mix. And I've talked about these true freshmen coming in the summer. I think both of them are going to get a real shot at potentially maybe playing as true freshmen, Nasir Addison and Avery Stewart. So to me, it was just kind of a wide open thing. But then, like, Nick, last year they added Zion Childress, and we were like, well, that's kind of a, they don't really need a safety, do they? Mm-hmm. They seem good there, and he turned out to be, you know, you got the scholarships. You need to spend them. So if you can find a good football player, don't be afraid to bring them on. And that, so I think that had a lot to do with the interest here. And he's a guy that's also blown up. A&M's offered him. He's got about 10, 12, 13 Power 5 offers now. So he's a guy that could probably go in any direction.
Paul Rick Spicer, which is that's got a spicy name there. He said, we definitely got to kick the ball and get a field goal. Last year was a nightmare. We haven't seen significant movement there, but I think you did mention on KS Board that there are some options out there. It's just maybe it isn't a matter of, are they good enough options?
Right, exactly. Last I checked, there were three kickers in the portal. Kid from East Carolina, Central Michigan's kicker, and then Ohio State's backup. Ohio State's backup really only played one game, made a field goal in the national championship loss to Alabama in 2020. East Carolina's kicker was all conference his first year, but then he was bad last year and lost his starting job. If you remember week one, he missed a kick against East State.
Oh, we were
like a 38-yarder.
We were watching that game on the big screen at the bar and just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And then the other one, Central Michigan kicker, who kind of had he had one good year and then one bad year. And so I don't have those names off the top of my head. But, yeah, in NFL free agency, even in the draft, your hands are tied on what is, you can only take what's available. In here, I just don't. I'm sure they maybe tampered with some guys, but nothing has really developed either in the December portal or this one to date. So it really might just, we might just be rolling the dice with Chance Poor. We'll see. We still got another week, over a week, with this portal being open, but so far there's no real buzz there. And I thought I had that money that Kentucky would have added a kicker in this window, but as of right now, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
Right. And as you said, only if it's worth it. So you're kind of going for best available at this point, which brings us to a question that BB and Katz one had on KS Board, which, by the way, if you haven't signed up yet, $10, lots of scoop going down there. And if you're worried that you're going to miss out on it, a lot of it eventually gets filtered out. So we're not trying to hide anything from you, but you do get some extra access. Like BB and Katz once said, and he has thoughts on taking another transfer quarterback that could potentially sit a year and start for the 24 season. He mentioned Brock Vandergriff. We found out last night from 1-3's Jake Rowe that Vandergriff is not going to be Vanda going into the transfer portal, which was a surprise to a lot. Former five-star, kind of losing that battle to Carson Beck right now. So that was at least surprising. But I think now all eyes turn to Tuscaloosa, and You smelling some smoke down there, Luckett?
Yeah, it's been reported by our On3, on Miami On3 site, Kane Sport. Gary Furman wrote something. Pretty much Tyler Van Dyke's. He's represented by Drew Rosenhaus. Multiple college football teams have reached out to Drew Rosenhaus, and Alabama is one of them. Tommy Rees apparently wanted to target Van Dyke at Notre Dame when he first entered the portal. Or not when it's the first portal window, but he just never entered.
Mm-hmm.
There's frustration from the Van Dyke camp that he can't sign a big NIL deal at Miami. The way that Gary Furman put it is they have a big pile of money, and it just kind of gets distributed evenly throughout the team.
Hmm. It's kind of surprising because De'Aaron King was the original nil poster child. So
you remember what happened to their basketball team last year with Isaiah Wong?
Yeah, that's true.
He got upset because he had an NIL deal, but Nigel Pack made more, and it was reported how much he was making. So they're trying to. I mean, to me, it's almost contract negotiations with John Ruiz, who runs a Life Wallet, and he's writing their NIL checks down there in Coral Gables. So maybe it's a power move by Van Dyke here. But it's also interesting that Alabama is looking for a quarterback and they don't feel good about Ty Simpson or Jalen Milroe. And we've always thought the loser of that job is going to enter the portal. Well, maybe they both do at some point.
Yeah.
The key here in all of this is, I think if you're Ryan Day at Ohio State, if you're Nick Saban at Alabama, if you're Kirby Smart at Georgia, is keeping these quarterbacks so you have a quality backup. In case something happens, keeping them around, lingering these QB competitions so they don't go anywhere.
Because they've needed them, right? I mean, Stetson Bennett was JT Daniels' third string until he got hurt, and then he ends up winning two national titles. We had the whole Tua Jalen Hurts situation. So, that it's important. It's very important.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Jalen Milroe had to play two. He had to play two SEC games last year. He started against A&M, and he played most of the Arkansas game. So they had to have him play. I mean, that's the big selling point. And I think these SEC schools, it helps that they can't transfer in conference after February 1st. They have to be in the portal by February 1st per league rule to transfer within the conference. So if you're Brock Vandegrift, and it's been reported that he was a big Auburn fan growing up, he's from the eastern side of the state of Georgia, I believe, they're going to be the favorite for him whenever he leaves. And so if he wanted to go to Auburn, he can't right now.
Yeah.
So you have to think, where do I want to go? You just have to, if I'm going to enter the portal, I can't go to SEC. Barry Alexander, defensive tackle from Georgia, who just entered. He's visiting USC this weekend. He can't, there would have been a thought. I think he was a former Texas A&M commit. He couldn't go to Texas A&M because of Sankey's rule. Greg Sankey's rule.
You might as well play for a place you don't want to than sit a year.
Right. And just in general on the quarterback, one, it's a hard sell here. Yeah, come here and be a backup. Cincinnati's Ben Bryant just entered the transfer portal. He was originally at Cincinnati, was Desmond Ritter's backup, transferred so he could start at Eastern Michigan. Desmond Ritter leaves for the NFL. He transfers back to Cincinnati. So Cincinnati essentially sent him to AAA for a minor league assignment, and then got him back once they have room on the roster. Started for them last year. He really played well the last 2 years, Eastern Michigan and Cincinnati. I would say he's a great college quarterback, but he's solid. Scott Satterfield's in town. They brought in Emory Jones from Arizona State. It looks like Emory Jones won that job in spring, and now he's in the portal. He is probably the top quarterback, I would say, available in the transfer portal right now. So what is a guy like that going to look for? I would assume he's just going to want to start somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Does he want to come? Does a cat from Illinois want to come to Kentucky and be a backup for a season?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think they're just in a tough spot. The best case scenario was always, Nick, you get Leary, and then we can get a Brock Vandegrift or someone like that. That's still young, that had a lot, like Walker Howard at Ole Miss, went from LSU to Ole Miss as a redshirt freshman. Just still has a lot of where he could be the next guy after Leary leaves. And that just never, I don't think, developed for Kentucky. And it hasn't developed yet. We'll see how the rest of this portal. It was either that or a guy in the Sawyer Smith mold or an FCS guy who's just wanting to move up and wants to take a swing at playing at the highest level in college football. So unless that happens, unless we see a quarterback at Wagner or Duquesne or wherever enter the portal and maybe Kentucky goes after him, I think you're going to enter this season with four scholarship quarterbacks and we're going to have a battle for QB2. Again.
We're speaking of QB2, Kirk Morton asked on the YouTube chat. Make sure you're subscribed, as always. I think Destin Wade got anything out of starting the bowl game other than game reps. I'm worried about O'Leary being too injury prone. We never really got anything definitive on QB2 at practice.
Kai Sharon's was the backup.
Yeah. But it wasn't it seems like a very much a out of it was the easiest way to go for Liam Cohen too, because Kai played in the system. He knows what he's getting out of Kaya.
They also had bigger problems they were dealing with.
Exactly, exactly. So, that wasn't the primary focus. He also, I remember hearing in Liam's first go around that he, I wasn't thinking about Kai Sharon at all, and he really liked him. So, it made the simple, that was the simplest solution. Let's try to push Kaya to be QB2 and have the chips fall where they may. So, do we think that Kentucky will enter the season with him being QB2, or is Wade the best potential option?
Yeah. A couple things here. They're going to say they don't add a transfer quarterback. They're going to enter a season where if anything happens to Leary, they're going to face a boatload of criticism. Because of this, if they have to play a backup quarterback and this backup quarterback, whoever it is not ready. But I don't know exactly what else to do. I really don't. Because you pick Leary, you picked who you thought was the best guy in the portal, you got your number one target, and if he gets hurt, I just don't know. Because it is a tough situation because you don't have anything to sell.
Well, especially when they seemingly are addressing the problem with quarterback protection by getting a couple offensive tackles.
Right, yeah, and I was going to get into that later. But, yeah, that is just don't get hurt, 13.
Yeah.
let's not open that can of worms.
And let's also just be real, too. If you got to play quarterback, too, for an extended amount of time, you're screwed. There's not –
if a situation arises like last year, they have to be able to win that game.
To win one game, exactly. And that is as much on the guy with the headset on as anything. You got to set him up for success better than what they did.
I hear you. But Kaya Sharon was not ready at this point in his career to go win an SEC game. He just wasn't. And so that's not on the player. That is on your roster building inefficiency.
Mm-hmm. Which is recruiting high school quarterbacks.
And now it's year over year over year. So, we talked about this ad nauseum. You just have to fix it. Just hopefully it doesn't happen 2 years in a row for them. As far as QB2 goes, I'd be more willing to bet on Destin Wade's traits. And the big thing is he can run the ball, If all things get bad, we can get run heavy here, and then we can manufacture a play-action passing game. That, to me, that was who I would go that. And where is Kaya Sharon at? Is he just, can he throw the ball 30 times and win a game? Because that's what it would take if he went in the lineup. The way Kentucky's roster is constructed, if you're going to get back there with a drop-back passer, you're not going to be able to just old school run the ball down the throat, run the defense's throat. You're going to have to throw the ball if he has to come in a game, or if Deuce Hogan has to come in a game. They're going to have to drop back and throw the football. Can he do that? I don't know. I can envision Destin Wade right now potentially being the better option just because he brings run game value, and you can switch up what you're doing on offense, and you can have a little bit of a surprise element because you're running. Because all them RPOs you're going to run with Leary, you can tag a run, a QB run off all of those now. And so, for in a short sample size, I could see you having more success doing that if he's the backup. And he's the youngest guy on the roster. And I think he probably has the highest ceiling, even though he probably has the lowest floor of all those passers.
To add to that, too, they kind of led off with the experience in the bowl game. I mean, we saw that Wade is at least the moment wasn't too big for him against the best defense in America, playing in his hometown. Like, there was a lot of he was not rattled whatsoever. Like, that
he didn't play. He did play good that game, but he was in a no-win situation in a lot of ways.
But you know what? He took it to the chin. So, like, I commend him for that. And, hell, that one practice where nobody could throw it through the 50-mile-an-hour wind gust, he might have had the longest throw of the day. So, there's some stuff there. But that's certainly a situation we're going to continue to monitor. Next question up, which I thought was interesting from our pal Hank Bramblett on Twitter, is UK understaff with off-the-field support staff relative to what it takes to be successful in the SEC. And this was definitely a problem early on in the Stoops tenure. Now, they aren't doing the Florida army of every assistant coach has two assistant coaches. But when we had these recruiting budget stories come out and Kentucky's kind of middle of the pack, I don't know if this is true, Lucky, but anecdotally, it feels like they're kind of middle of the pack, right? Like, they've got, four or five QCs, four or five GAs. Like, they're in the mix, but I don't think they're necessarily far behind, but they're certainly not one of those where Stoops has an army of Johnny Strength, Coach Enhancer, like some of those titles like that Florida has for Billy Napier's staff are ridiculous. So I don't think they're up there, but I don't think they're far behind where it's necessarily a hindrance to running a successful program.
Yeah, if you just hit the rewind button here. Kentucky, it's 2021. Kentucky's getting ready to play Louisville. Mark Stoops has a meeting with Mitch Barnhart where they talk about contract extension, what he needs to stay here, what the university needs to commit long-term. And they upgrade Liam Cohen's pay. They upgrade Brett White's pay. Mark Stoops gets a nice raise, but a big part of that, Nick, was recruiting budget, which, to my understanding, that was like, if we need to fly somewhere, we can do it. We don't have to wait. You have access to a jet, pretty much, so they can just go whenever they want to, and that so it expanded money official visit weekends, so they can spend freely a little bit, and it was bolstering the recruiting staff. To my knowledge, before this happened, like, the recruiting staff was like Josh Pruitt and Chase Ikey, essentially, full-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Chase was like just out of college, I think, and then Pruitt's been here for a long time, and now Pruitt's been promoted to kind of a administration position, I think. But now you look at their staff, Nick, they just in the recruiting department alone, I think they have like five or six full-time people.
Correct.
And then you look at GAs they've even extended. Nick, they've got seven GAs now. And I think it used to be like four.
Maybe even only three whenever CJ Conrad first started. They had like an offense, defense, and the special teams.
Then quality control, they have six quality control assistants. They have four strength coaches, essentially, Nick. Corey Edmond, Mark Hill, Raphael Horton, and Tyler Malone. Like, they've got four guys that are running the strength and conditioning department.
Used to just be the two at the top. So they doubled that.
It was Edmond at first. And then Hill's, he's only been here 5 years. So it's been very recent.
18 was his first year, maybe. But the other part you have to think of, too, when these off the field staffers, like, it's not just bodies. Like, what are you actually doing? And a part of that recruiting department is, this guy went in, here's his tape, Brad White, here's his tape, Liam Cohen, what do we think, right? Do we go after this guy or not? So they can act quickly and be on the ball soon. And then the other part of it, too, is the support staff isn't just supporting the coaches, it's also supporting the players. So they have some sort of intermediaries where you aren't going to your position coach or even the head coach for every little gripe, right? And Vince Marrow, he's a conduit for a lot of those players. Same thing with Drake. Same thing with CJ. Like, they have a lot of those boxes checked from that standpoint as well. So, to your point, numbers, not only numbers-wise, but they're also kind of filling the responsibilities that need to be filled to have a functioning program.
Yeah. On their roster, they have four listed full-time recruiting employees plus a football recruiting assistant. And they have it split. Like, there's guys who are in there grinding tape and evaluating prospects and looking at what the coaches probably have a metric checklist they want checked off before they even look at a player, and they're probably doing all that. But there's also Danielle Braswell, who is kind of the organizer, right? She is the party planner, like helping set up the official visits.
Yeah.
Getting players where they need to go on the golf cart when they're around campus, getting coaches in the right spot where they're supposed to be, you know, and that was a big hire. I mean, she had extensive SEC experience at A&M and Auburn. And so she's a huge part of, you know, probably setting up those photo shoots that you see, those cool video packages that they put out with the music in the background and all the little different, you know, poses they do in the jersey that, you know, I would assume she's probably organizing a lot of that, and they're working hand in hand with the coaches on all that. And so yes, Kentucky is there. This is not Georgia. This is not Alabama. This is not Florida, but I'd have a hard time imagining they're one of the, and when it comes to support staff, like in the bottom of the league, like, I think you're right. Your estimation is right. They're probably middle of the pack. Maybe it'll be an offseason assignment. Go through rosters and figure out how many full-time recruiting staffers other school. But it's hard because some of them don't list them all, right? Alabama doesn't list all of their guys Saban has working there. So at least last I checked, they don't. So that would be kind of hard to do. But I think, yeah, but that was a big part of when the 2021 season ended, was upgrading all of that. And then you remember after it happened, there was a picture of like Stoops and White getting off that jet or whatever, going to see Davison and Igbinison in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think all of that pretty much got – I think there was a worry about that, and I think all of those issues kind of got solved when he signed that extension. Then that was also when they agreed to, you know, expand the indoor, which is happening right now.
Correct. It's just dirt under there now. They're in the process of redoing it. They redid the turf field. Somebody asked my – why is the UK so small in the middle of the Kroger Field turf? Which I appreciated that question, because when we were growing up, that Power K went from 30 to 30. So
that's right.
A little different now. Don't have an answer to that. But I do have an answer to I'm also hope, like, my computer is not letting me change windows or do anything right now. So fingers crossed that it holds up throughout the whole podcast. Don't want another Jack Pilgrim situation here on the YouTube stream. But we had somebody ask on Twitter. That seems a good question. Biggest jump from year one to year two from our great.
Yes, I like this
class from last season. That was from BB and commenter on Twitter. I have a pick, and that's Keaton Wade, because we didn't really see a lot of him last year, except in some spurts. Whenever, you know, we had to deal with the injuries at the edge position, he was just kind of here, there a little bit. I think they're going to be sprinkling him in more, somewhat out of necessity. You don't have Jordan Wright there, but also because right now they don't have another off-ball linebacker, and that's Brad said, you know, it's kind of
break glass in case of emergency right now.
They've been working with, so I like that at choice as a set, because he's got the tools, right? And he also has the mentality, the right work ethic. So I would expect, he's the one I have most confidence in taking a jump in production from year one to year two. Who do you got, Luckett?
A lot of this is like picking your favorite child, because there's a lot of good players in this class already.
Oh, gosh.
You know, Like, we could, in hindsight, easy. What I mean, if like Deion Walker becomes an All-American this year, like that's the easy answer, right? Like, if that guy takes another jump, he's going to be an absolute game wrecker. I think Alex Safari might be the answer here, just because I think he's going to have a big role in the defense, kind of being their, essentially being their Sam linebacker, playing that kind of medium position. You know, Dane Key, I think, is a guy going to make a big jump. Tyrese Fearbury, I'll be interested to see just situationally if he could give them anything as an edge rusher, especially as the season progresses, when attrition, or not, when injuries maybe start piling up and you need somebody in there to mix it up. He's one I think to watch. But I guess my answer would be Alex Safari, just because I think he's going to step into a full-time role this year, and I think he's going to be a valuable part of the defense. And I think we may have lost Mr. Roush here. He is frozen. As he stares at us, we'll go to some more questions here. Let's see. After Ray Davis, how is the running back room looking / progressing? This is from Daniel Goodpasser via Twitter. That's a good question. So let's pull up the little, our depth chart, or our roster distribution chart here. Kentucky has 6 scholarship running backs on the roster right now. You've got Ray Davis and Jatan McClain at the top of the room. And then after that, you've got Lavelle Wright and D. Beckwith. We're kind of the guys in the spring running with the twos and getting reps in practice. But the two names to watch here to me are Ramon Jefferson, former Sam Houston State transfer, who got injured in the first game last year against Miami, Ohio, and true freshman Jarian Wilcox, who will be a summer enrollee, was one of Kentucky's biggest recruiting wins in this past cycle. I think Davis and McClain give you a twosome that you can really depend on and rely on. Has played football in big games in the SEC, but Jefferson and Wilcox, to me, are what will set the ceiling in the room. Jefferson was a huge addition. Nick's back now. We're talking running backs right now. Kind of what are things looking like after Ray Davis, specifically how they're looking progressing. And to me, my answer really was McClain and Davis kind of set your floor, but Jefferson and Wilcox are going to set the ceiling. What you can get from one of those guys potentially as a big playback, change of pace, is really kind of, I think that's essential for the running back room. And then you really need Wilcox to emerge to be a guy, because that's the future of the room, because all the other guys are older. You need him to come in and be your next, you know, if he could come in and be your next multi-year starter, you know, guy that could be a 1,000-yard rusher here, that would solve a lot of issues and give you a real building block for the offense. And let's face it here, Nick, you go through this offense, like, they've had a lot of misses in recruiting. That's why they're going in the transfer portal. Right tackle, Cortland Ford potentially. Left tackle, Marcus Cox. Ray Davis running back. Devin Leary quarterback. Tavian Robinson receiver. They've had some recruiting misses, and you can't miss like that consistently. You've got to fix that with high school recruiting. They fixed receiver, it looks like, and hopefully Wilcox can be the start of fixing that running back, where it's only be a 1-year gap, and then you'll be back rolling with one of your homegrown recruits.
Yeah, and that's I got a little, I'm going to say worried, but I was hoping Sam Williams-Dixon would be would play.
I just wouldn't panic about that. You can find tailbacks. We didn't know Wilcox was not or barely rated or a low 3-star at this point last year.
It's true.
Like, these guys are, you'll find good running backs. That's why it was so disappointing, I thought, last year, that Chris Rodriguez has got this suspension, and that you had a room of scholarship running backs and you really couldn't find anything. You know,
you get
the bad Jefferson injury. But then you just, a lot of blah other than that. That was disappointing. But you can find good running backs really anywhere in the country.
It's just finding the right ones, too.
Yeah. I think they found one here with Jamarian Wilcox, and hopefully he can be good. And I feel confident that they'll be able to find another one. But it's a big test for Jay Bull, where we don't really know, like, recruiting-wise, what areas he's going to focus in on, what he really wants in the running back room. We're going to have to learn all of that.
I saw he was in South Florida for at least one.
Yeah.
So that's something. But I like your thoughts there, because right now there really are only two known entities. But you need more than that. You just do. Although you do got to give Davis credit for, you know, being able to log as many snaps as he did last year. However, throughout his career, he's had a couple bad injuries. So
that's right.
Yeah. So we'll see. Couple more questions we got up. Somebody on Tyler Case asked on the YouTube chat, what do y'all think of the preseason power ranking at Kentucky outside of the top seven in the SEC? That was ESPN's FPI that had been number 28 going into the season. Kentucky was 24th in SP Plus. So similar territory. Like, I was just fascinated that the numbers are so kind to Florida when there's not a lot. Like, I know they return a lot of production on defense and they have the recruiting rankings, right? But like, what do they got on offense? You know,
Nick, you want to take a crap on the ACC right quick?
Oh, I'd love to. Let's do it.
I'm going to list you the top 25 teams per SP Plus, preseason SP Plus in the ACC. Number 11, Florida State. Number 12, Clemson. That is the number of top 25 teams, SP Plus, in the ACC. My take on that is, when the SEC, like, there's just a lot of good teams here. Like, there's a lot of talent. All these teams recruit really well. That is baked into all of these numbers, especially in the preseason. That has a lot to do with the numbers, is recruiting ranking, five-year recruiting results, and recent history. So, SEC, they've got a lot of teams have done well recently. And so, you'd see teams, you know, you see a team like a Florida who, you know, what's still baked into Florida's equation is all those 10 and 11 seasons, win seasons Dan Mullen had.
It's true. It's true.
So that's why that helps explain why they are in their recruiting ranking on top of that. And for Kentucky, like, they're definitely in, I would say, this kind of second, you know, I would say tier one is Alabama, Georgia, national champions, true national championship contenders. Tier two would be kind of like fringe championship contenders, playoff guys. I would think if they're like LSU, A&M for talent only, you know, maybe you throw Tennessee in there. And then Kentucky's right there with everyone else. You know, they're right there in the thick of the middle class in the SEC. And so if a couple things bounce their way, they can push for 9-10 wins. And that's, for Kentucky, that's a very, very good place to be. There's a lot worse places to be in college football. So I wouldn't overreact to like these power rankings just because there's just a lot of these teams are good. All these teams have talent and good coaches, and so they can finish anyway. But I do think Kentucky's got, they've set it up where the floor is last year. Like, say, like, things went awful last year and they still finished 7-5.
Yeah. And they were also in the top 25 and 9 out of the 14.
They were ranked against Vanderbilt.
Yeah. I mean,
after they beat Missouri, they were back in the top 25.
Yeah.
If they don't lose that game, they probably go to the Outback Bowl.
Yeah. So, we did touch on them, though, and we had somebody else ask about stopping or slowing down the Josh Heupel offense.
Yes.
I know one thing we can't do, and that's slow down the Josh Heupel hype train, because, my God, the people who are telling themselves that Joe Milton can complete a pass, they're cracking me up. I've seen clips of the volleyball player in the spring game that people were drooling over. Do we know who they're ultimately going to ride with? Is it going to be Joe Milton?
Yes. That's going to be like the Stephon LaFleur's Brian Brohm mix-up, where Brohm had like the third series of the game.
You get the third and like the sixth or something like that.
I'm assuming that they'll have something similar with Nico. The only way they don't is if Milton is just killing it, which I wouldn't project. People ask me about this all the time. We talked about this while you're on paternity leave in the podcast we had to preview the Tennessee game. If you want to go back and listen to that, kind of explain what this offense is, how hard it is to defend. Essentially, like, number one, Kentucky's defense did not play bad in that game down there. They had the one coverage bust because I believe Carrington Valentine took a bit on the bender inside on the switch release and just freed him running down the sideline.
Right.
Jalen Hyatt. And they bit on that again later in the game on Hyatt's like 35-yard touchdown. you take those two plays out, they play fine. Half the possession started on Tennessee side of the ball, or Kentucky side of the field. Like, the offense gave them no chance at all to even compete in that game. I don't think Kentucky's defense was all that bad. You go back 2 years ago, there was just injuries piled up there at the end, and they just couldn't hold up at the line of scrimmage in that game, and that was the biggest issue. And then you had the bust. That is the biggest issue to me. It's just they've had these busts. They just got to fix that. You can't have the bust against Tennessee.
See, because they take advantage. Like, if you give them an inch, they take it a mile.
Well, like, it's a switch release offense. It's deep choice routes. A lot of times, you know, Jalen Hyatt's running around on first down, and he's just – Hendon Hooker's looking the left side. Cedric Tillman's over there eating popcorn, just chilling on the other side, not even running a route. And then they do it – then they'll switch the next play. I mean, a lot of – and it's play action. They max protect. And so you only got, like – and they use spacing to their advantage where there's no, like – it's not reading zone or whatever. You're reading a player – and if and he's either going to bend it outside or he's going to cut it in, depending on how he reads the safety or, you know, or then how the corner plays leverage. And that's just how it is. And that's why the thing with Hooker is, like, when NFL teams watch his tape, it's like, well, he's not even playing the same sport. Like, he's staring down a receiver and he's making a read off a cut, off an option route. I mean, there's no reading coverages at all or you know, designating or pre-snap reads or anything. It's very elementary, but you got to be able to cover and you can't have bust. And so the two things to me is, like, if you put on the Georgia, and Georgia's easy, but Georgia had guys who could cover in the back end, and they had a game wrecker inside that you can block because you're getting max protections in passing downs. You're just not going to have a numbers advantage with your pass rush. And so for in that game, you got to have a guy that can just dominate in the A and B gaps.
Dominate, and then
you got to have a guy like Deion Walker. Exactly. Like that is, if Kentucky cannot have success these next 2 years with big number zero against Tennessee, that's just not going to happen. Because, well, I mean, that's just that. Those are the kind of guys that really wreck a Tennessee game plan. If you look at Alabama's defensive line last year, Nick, they just didn't have the typical game wreckers up front, and that's going to play out next week in the draft in Kansas City. They'll have one or two guys that defensive line. They're going to go in the fifth or sixth rounds. Edge rushers they have a better chance to handle inside. They don't, and so if you can't get a push inside, it's just going to be a long night.
And then if you look at their other loss to South Carolina,
they had guys that could cover. Cam Smith, Darius Rush are going to be top 50 picks at cornerback.
And in addition to that, too, I mean, that was what, like a 60-40 game. I mean, part of it was you got to score points to beat them. I mean, you just do, and. I trust this play caller to be able to score more points. He did the first time around against that defense. And also, they got, what, three turnovers forced in that game? Uh-huh. I mean, just got to get a couple stops. So,
yeah. You're playing Madden when you play them in a lot of ways. I mean, 2 years ago, Kentucky – I'm not going to sit here and say they played them well, but, like, that's a game where you hold them to 31 points, you should win. Like, your offense has got to go score 35 to win the game. I mean, that's bottom line. And so Kentucky last year up in Kroger Field, they gave up 38 defensive points. Will Levis throws a pick six. But they got the key stop at the end to give them a chance to go win the game. And then this past year, that was it for Scangarello. That you went down there off a bye week, and that was what you put out there. In a big moment, and you're on ESPN, Kirk Herbstreit's on the call, a big moment for the program, just like, you know, it hadn't been a great year to this point, but you got a chance to kind of, you know, get the ship corrected. And to go down there, and that's what they put out on the field was just
– Do you remember his rationale, too, for their opening drive? They said, we know they like to hit hard and stop the run, so we're going to run it right at them. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You got – a big number seven back there, and so you're just going to play right into what they want to do. That was something. That was something. Let's get to some more questions. Speaking of big number seven, up on KS board, STC80 Kentucky has final predictions on Levis' draft position, and how important is it that he go high for our future success in recruiting quarterbacks, portal transfers? Look, I feel like some of this is least for the future, like you've already done that work. Like whether he goes 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 20, that's already done. The him being in that Kentucky uniform and all of this pre-draft coverage, which is all over the place on ESPN, that's already done your mark. As far as predictions, I love the odds of him going to the Texans. I love the late minute CJ Stroud, like Brady Quinn saying that he turned down Manning's, you know, like I love all the last minute kind of bluster. I've done some thinking on it, Luckett. And I think the place that benefits him the most and probably makes the most sense is the one that was the suitor to begin with, and that was Indy. Like, as all of the like moving around and stuff, Indy, I think Indy would work well for him because they can run the football. I don't know. I can't think of any of their receivers off the top of my head.
They're Michael Pittman, and that's it.
Yeah. So they don't have help there, but at least some help in the run game, I think, can give him a nice start to his career. And I also just think from, you know, what Chris Ballard likes in a quarterback, he'll have a little protection. I ultimately think Indy is going to be my prediction. What say you, Luckett?
Yeah, Shane Steichen, play calling head coach. You know, that they can grow together and they're going to kind of be joint at the hip, I think would help a lot. To me, I really do think like Seahawks and Vikings both have Rams guys running their offense. Shane Waldron in Seattle, Kevin O'Connell's the head coach in Minnesota. Both have older quarterbacks they're moving on from soon. I think for him, just playbook familiarity, they're going to have a head start on knowing, I think, Levis, just because of the working relationship with Cohen already. Mm-hmm. They're going to speak the same language, all of that type stuff. I think that would – either of those places would be nice.
By all accounts – are they willing to trade up or, you know, I think – is Seattle at 5? Like, are you willing to use the 5th overall pick for a quarterback that might not play this year, you know?
That's the fun part of this. There was some other reporting that the Colts have Levis, too, on their board at the quarterback. It's Bryce Young. They want Bryce Young, but they're not going to get him. And so they're going to have to decide what they want to do there. And then, like, the Texans are huge. You know, do they trade back? If they trade back, who would trade up to get that? And then the Cardinals are sitting there as a trade back. It feels like, to me, someone's going to trade up like the Titans and get him. Like, I think that would probably be my pick. The Titans, they had a big showing at Kentucky's Pro Day. They need a quarterback. I think Levis and Tannehill, I think it's not a terrible comp for him. If Levis was a successful NFL quarterback, it would probably look a little bit like Tannehill when he was good with the Titans. Heavy play action game.
Yep. Could throw a deep ball too. Yeah. I mean, he had that big pass against the Ravens
and has some run game value.
Yeah.
I could see that potentially. I think that would be my pick right now. I still have to dig in. And the hard part is just the trades are just like, I think it could be a wild draft and these mocks are going to get burned early. Position.
Like teams are willing to give up a lot to potentially get their guy. So
yeah. My big prediction, Nick, I think, is someone trades up to draft Will Levis, wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's trading up to get him. And so who is it? We'll have to wait and see.
Let's get to another question. This question is going to be the Serve Pro question. Serve Pro of Lexington, the guys in green are the mean cleanup team. They helped us out when mini disaster struck at KS office. It was a mess of dead birds and God knows what in there. And Surf Pro of Lexington, they were there just like that to help all of your needs. I know it's storm season right now. The winds are a whomping and a whirling over my head as we speak. And I've also got an air show practicing. So I've got jet planes kind of going in the background. Just only a slight distraction. But if you have any disaster, fire, water, whatever it may be, mold remediation, storm damage, commercial cleanup, demolition, locally owned and operated Surf Pro of Lexington has you covered. Give them a call at 859-225-3193. Visit them online at surfprolexingtonky.com and tell them KSR sent you at Surf Pro of Lexington, faster to any disaster. Luckett, I was really intrigued by this question. Who's the next 2024 commitment? Who's
yes. it gonna be? I'm glad you picked this one.
It came
from Dylan Mesman commits next week.
35 on the cast board.
Dylan Mesman, tight end out of Michigan, commits next week, Friday, April 28th. That's one to watch. I think it's down to Kentucky and Michigan State. So if that ends up being Kentucky, he's going to be the next one, I would say. After that.
Keep in mind, he's a Michigan State legacy. So.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to win, you think. After that, that's a very good question. Willie Rodriguez, Kentucky just offered out of Covington Catholic, but that's a loaded kind of recruitment now.
Yeah.
Kind of out of nowhere.
A lot of SEC schools got in there. I saw or actually reported that Demarion Witten is going to be visiting this weekend.
Yeah, four-star tight end out of Glenville.
Yeah, he's a ball player. Put up some big
points. Yeah, they got some good options. Good options, really, here at tight end. It's kind of a shame that they really only need one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a lot of emerging options, and I think that it had part of the reason why we saw Gavin Grover go ahead and commit to Cincinnati to just grab a spot because maybe mm-hmm. Kentucky was, I think, they were still evaluating, I think, their talent pool at tight end.
Correct.
When he was wanting to commit.
I could see them taking two if the second one's Justin Caddis. Just because, like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's get all the Caddises and need them all. The younger Caddis, the youngest of them all, Tucker, he's going to be like a top 150 offensive tackle. He's a freaking hoss. He's just a bigger Josh Caddis. So that one's down the road. If you have a most – who's the number one guy you want in 2024? Because I it's an easy answer for me.
I mean, the Shaq McRoy –
Yeah.
Down in Alabama. The top 200 tackle.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to, they need to get more, start getting wins like that again on the offensive line. So that would be significant. The Smith twins, who are now at Loomis Chaffee there in Connecticut from Somerset. That would be a big one. Can my answer be Cutter Bowley?
No, he's a 2025 recruit.
Well, for now.
Yeah, for now. That could be your correct answer at the end of the day. I did notice the Smith twins, they haven't narrowed a list, but one of them put out a poll, where should we go? And
yeah,
it was only four schools. Notre Dame was long seen as a favorite, and they weren't included. Kentucky was.
Instead of arguing with my wife where to eat dinner, I'm just going to do that. We're going to do the Twitter poll. Four restaurants, and whatever we win, that's where we're going.
And just three of the options are Roosters. Oh, man. But yeah, those visits and everything, they'll crank up in June. So, the answer is Cortland Ford. Or wait, is he technically a 2024?
He would be a 2023, technically.
Yeah, technically. Nevertheless, like that question that we had on KS Board, another KS Boarder asked, Blue Wildcat, which in-state recruits do you think Kentucky's going to take from this 24 class? I know one that I'm going to keep a close eye on. I have a feeling that old Uncle Jeff at Louisville is going to go all in on Sean Boykins at North Hardin.
Yeah, I think he visits there this weekend for the spring game.
Yeah, so I think Kentucky is still. They know he's got some good get off speed, but like, there's also they can as we've talked about a lot, they can kind of pick who they want at receiver. Do they want to go all in on that guy?
Small class at receiver too, Nick. I mean,
yeah.
They three guys last year. You look at that position room. If you look at just the scholarship distribution, you've got nine scholarship players. Everyone's a sophomore outside of Tavian Robinson, sophomore freshman. Yeah. True freshman, redshirt freshman, true sophomores, redshirt. So you're just young in that room.
Yeah.
It's not a huge need as of right now because you get more than one guy. You're pushing over 10 scholarship receivers, and Kentucky's offensively, their profile, that's just not what they need. Scholarships need to be spent elsewhere.
Which I guess Rodriguez would probably be consideration, but there are
to me, they need two running backs before they need two wide receivers in this class.
Correct. Which the state isn't really offering right now. I know further down the road in 25, there's two Boyle County kids. There's the Edge, and then there's Quisenberry, yeah. who's a yeah. really good athlete. I'm curious to see how Quisenberry's recruitment takes off this summer. And then does X going to give it to you? Tiger Tech, y'all got any recruits over there?
Not that I know of right now. I have to – we'll dig in this. Well, you know, it's not – you can only work one class at a time. So we're going to – like you mentioned, we're just now learning about the 2025 kids.
Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of ways. So we'll figure all that out.
Jeremiah Lowe is
– yes.
And they're really spreading their wings in cornerbacks. And I know Clink is trying to recruit the Douglas corner there. So that's going to be one I keep an eye on. And then I'm not sure about the linemen, though, because they've already taken two guards. And I think the other Douglas lineman's a guard. So I'm not.
Sorry, Madison.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I don't really know what to think of that Sorry, Madison recruitment because he just visited Austin Peay. I think he visited West Virginia. I don't know if he's going to be like at the level where Kentucky, like where he would be a take for Kentucky.
The thing too, Luckett, that you're dealing with in-state recruiting in this class is I don't know how good the talent pool is. You know, I don't know if there's going to be 12 Power 5 guys like we have had in some recent years. But at the same time, you also don't want the new coach at Louisville coming in and taking a bunch of guys either. So, like, you got to play this. And that's a lot of what I've learned recruiting. It is such a balancing act of, like, we kind of like this guy, but do we go all in on him? So playing that balancing act, it's going to be fascinating to watch. What?
Yeah, it's just a different dynamic with Jeff Brom. Yeah, he's going to take guys in state, and so yeah. You know you don't want, you know, North Hardin's been a very good pipeline for Kentucky for a long time, even pre-Stoops. You know, if a guy like Boykins goes there and is good.
Right, you don't want to lose that because you know that
he's when the next Jordan Lovett comes, right? Or exactly. Who, you know, you want to be able to have that and be able to, you know, make it easier for you to land,
right?
A guy like that. So yeah, absolutely.
We're gonna be keeping a close eye on it. I want to answer this question from Chaka Cummings, who's been active on the YouTube chat. He actually asked this one earlier on Twitter. Who is an under the radar player that you're excited to see this upcoming season? Under the radar.
Khalil Saunders.
Okay.
I think if Saunders makes a jump, which I think he can, a starting defensive line with him, Deion Walker, and the best of kind of Ox, Ripka, or Silver, it's just really intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can be a really good defensive, or really just, you know, you could be Hayes, Walker, Saunders, like that defensive Hayes or Silver, Walker, Saunders, like that defensive line is really intriguing to me. That's a lot of length. Like if you put Silver in there, that you're 6'4", 6'6", 6'5", across the board.
Right.
All those guys are 290 plus. Like that is intriguing.
It's hard to block.
And then, yeah. And then just the depth, the overall depth of the defensive line is intriguing to me. Like if that was your three, and then you had guys like Josiah Hayes, Ox, and Ripka rotating in, like that's a nice six there. It's a nice six regardless. But if those are your if Hayes, Ox, Ripka is your second unit, that's a damn good defensive line.
Yeah. No doubt. I do like the defensive side of it too because. And he's not necessarily under the radar, but I don't feel like we talk about him a ton. But Trevin Wallace is going to be a full-time starter. And up until this point in his career, he's really relied a lot on his athleticism to make plays. What's this guy going to be like now that he kind of knows how to play the position, right? He's got a lot of reps logged so far, filling in for the injured DeAndre Square. I mean, that dude could be an absolute menace, particularly the way that Brad White talked about how comfortable he is with his safeties.
Yeah.
Brad's not a big blitzer, but he'll throw a dog on you and let Wallace just run free. Just a little delayed blitz. That dude can close ground in a hurry. I mean, I don't think you want a linebacker to lead your team in sacks, but that'll probably be the case this year. I could see him getting 6.5 sacks as an inside linebacker, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see him take the next step into this starting role where, I mean, hell, if this would have been 8 years ago, he's playing, 100. He's playing every snap as a true freshman, right? Like, he's that good of an athlete. So,
yeah.
Excited to see what Wallace can do in the fall of 23. Well, okay, we've gotten to a lot of questions. Are there any questions that you've seen out there that you'd like to address that we haven't specifically touched on?
Let me roll down here.
Oh, UK 199 on the board was one of your questions. He said, what's the ceiling for Leary this year?
That's what I was looking at.
That's exactly Heisman? What I was looking at. Heisman?
I think this is a good question. When Kentucky add Leary, I just think the main reason is just the high floor. Like, I know what I'm going to get from him.
Well, and before you get on, I like the question too, because we've often talked about, like, what if he gets hurt? Like, that's usually been the driving conversation, is we know he's good. He has a high floor, but what if he gets hurt? So what is the ceiling? What can he do, especially compared to some of the other quarterbacks in the SEC?
Yeah, I think the ceiling would be kind of like a year like Levis had in 2021, where he's counted for 32, 33 touchdowns, less interceptions, completing right around the same. It just would look different. But, 33 touchdowns, counted for, six, seven, eight picks, averaging right around 8 yards per attempt, 63, 64% completion rate, where I don't think he's necessarily the best quarterback. I mean, you never know. We'll see how the year shakes out. I mean, you look at the quarterback roster in the SEC, it's not like super great right now, but some of these schemes, specifically Tennessee, when KJ Jefferson, and all those guys, they're going to put up numbers. So he might not have the best numbers, but I could see him I just think he's going to be like a legitimate top 25 quarterback in the college football. So that maybe that's not, I don't think he's going to be a Heisman guy, but I think he's just going to be rock solid and dependable each week. And that's really how I kind of expecting him to play. I'm not expecting him to be necessarily a superstar, but just be a good college quarterback. And for Kentucky, people will probably act like that's a superstar, because that's not something they've had a lot of here recently.
Yeah. Well, and some of it depends. Like, you mentioned KJ Jefferson. Like, if Arkansas season falls apart, if Tennessee underperforms, there's a way where he can be a first team all SEC quarterback. I do, but ultimately, probably second team, yes. I think, would be the most, like, reasonable, great season that, like, feels within reach for him, which is second-best quarterback in the SEC. When was the last time you said that,
Yeah. Yeah, you just got, like, Jaden Daniels, he's going to put up numbers because of the run game. KJ Jefferson can run it, too. He's going to put up numbers. Tennessee, you could just pencil in the numbers. Now, Mississippi State, now that the air raid's out, you're not penciling in those numbers anymore.
Right, which Rogers would have.
But the Georgia and Alabama quarterbacks are just going to, they're going to be up there regardless just because of it's Georgia and Alabama. But he's got a chance, I think, like I've said, to be a top three or four quarterback in the SEC. And if you have that on your roster, you should be winning some football games.
Grant Harmon asks on the YouTube chat, who's the fourth receiver? Is it DeKal?
Can I say Jordan Dingle?
No, receiver.
Yeah, DeKal Crowdis is wide receiver four right now.
Because I do think that as far as
Anthony Brown's pushing him, though.
Dingle might be the third receiver behind Keyon Brown. Man.
Yeah.
You're talking about balancing acts, how you play the tight ends versus receivers.
last meeting Stoops gave us, he gave some kind words to DeKal Crowdis. Just talked about his work ethic, how it's improved. I think he's early. He's going to get a shot.
Yeah. And he'll get some big shots. They'll be deep shots,
If it doesn't happen, then I think you could see some of these true freshmen, whether it be Shamar Porter or Anthony Brown, maybe working their way into the mix.
They're really high on Anthony Brown. Really excited to see what he can do. Really happy that you all hung out with us, submitted questions. This has been a lot of fun. I always wondered and worried about these mailbags, like, we gonna have enough? No, you all gave some great questions. We appreciate you. This has been a lot of fun. It keeps us on our toes, right? Because we kind of you get a little groupthink with some of this, where you're kind of stuck in a rut. You all picked us up out of this rut a week before we'll be traveling to the NFL draft. I know Luckett is already cooking up draft profiles. He's got a draft guide coming out this weekend to get you ready. And I'm just excited. I'm very excited. Wants to kind of, because I feel like the combine, you really get fired up, and then pro day is shortly after it. But then you still got another month to wait. So it kind of drags on, and I don't know what to believe from all, you know, people's BS here and there. So next week,
we'll have real stuff to react to as well.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're tentatively kind of formulating a plan right now. And then I'm trying to get all my Derby ducks in a row. That's going to be a lot of fun. So, man, it's a great time of the year. Great time of the year. And it's always the best time of year to be banking with our friends at Monticello Bank. Go NBC app, NBCBank.com. And I think I got that wrong because I'm an hour and 5 minutes into talking and my belly started grumbling. So thanks to you so much. There you see, he's got the NBC logo. I've been rocking the hell out of the NBC hat. They got some nice swag. They hooked us up with at Monticello Bank.
They do. Coffee mug is getting work here in the Luckett House. It is in the rotation now.
Plenty of convenient locations for you nearby. Stop by, see one today. And you'll see plenty of us next week on the KSR YouTube channel. We'll have some behind-the-scenes updates on KS Board throughout our travels to Kansas City. Videos from not only reaction from the draft, but we'll have a preview show coming up Thursday from Kansas City. We'll hit you with one, a live show before we leave town on Friday. So a lot of exciting stuff to happen. Thanks for following along. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.